Hey everybody, welcome to the podcast. This is the Green Architects Lounge. I'm your host, Chris Briley.
And I'm your host, Phil Kaplan. Hello, Chris.
Hey, Phil. Good to see you again.
Good to see you.
In the new studio.
Yeah, it is a new studio. Chris moved.
That's right. Oh, yeah. We didn't mention that in the last podcast. No. I moved. F. Lee Bailey wanted my spot.
It's true.
It is true. If you know who F. Lee Bailey is. Oh, no, but because we're talking about green architecture, we won't get into Uber lawyers and why they're ousting little architects in there.
Hunt Chris down. He'll tell you over a drink.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's an amusing story.
It's actually not that amusing. Yeah, basically, greedy landlords plus famous tenant equals boot this guy. Find him a better place.
I'm sorry, Chris.
No, that's all right. This is okay. It's not bad. Different room tone.
Yeah.
Probably.
We'll see. Hey, so today we're talking about ground source heat pumps.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Ground source heat pumps, what are they good for? Because this is a very controversial subject, don't you think?
Somewhat controversial. Yeah, I think people get excited about it, and they don't have all the facts.
Yeah.
And there are, just like just about everything we talk about, Chris, there are so many different technologies,
mm-hmm.
but they're under the right circumstances, only one is the right one for you.
That's right.
There's no one answer to it's like to true what we're
love.
Doing here.
It's like true love.
True love.
I love ground source heat pumps, or maybe they're just not into me. I don't know. So, but let's
it's
start.
It's not you, Chris. It's them.
Right. We're done with the bizarro world, and I'm back to choosing the cocktail for the episode.
That's right. Tell us about it.
This is one of my favorites for the summertime. Mm-hmm. This is the dark and stormy. Yeah, you hear that because we got ice. Because the bigger glasses. Because this is
they are bigger glasses.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, okay. So what it is? It's basically one part rum, two parts ginger brew or ginger. I'd say ginger ale, but I'd be wrong because then you'd be putting Canada Dry in this, and that's wrong. What you want is a Jamaican style ginger beer or ginger brew. I'm using Main Root ginger brew, who are also sponsors of Green Drinks in Portland. They're great, and so we got a little local brew, and I'm using Gosling's Black Seal rum because
right, and that is the rum you use.
Exactly,
I understand it for the dark and stormy.
That's right.
Only Gosling's.
That's right. They invented it, and plus, I hate Bacardi. I shouldn't have.
They'll never be a sponsor.
They'll never be a sponsor. I'm sorry, Bacardi.
That's probably best. Once we start taking,
I used to think I had this thing with rum where we didn't get along. Turns out, no. Me and the lighter Bacardis are just. We're not buddies.
That's what it was.
I switched to something like this. I'm a happy guy. This is great. So, you know, it's summer's
here. You're usually a happy guy.
I know. I am. I'm one of those guys who just like, you know. So summer's here, buddy. I love it. It's great. So spicy. Give me a cheers.
Cheers.
Here we go. An icy cheers. Mm-hmm. Good. Oh, yeah. So, you ready to delve into this geothermal?
I'd love to. Now, I have to preface this by saying.
You know what I just did? I just said it was geothermal. I just said geothermal, didn't
I? You did. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about this.
Okay.
You know, a lot of people say geothermal.
They're
wrong.
The
first thing that slips off their tongue.
Yeah.
We understand why. It's a common mistake. I mean, when people say geothermal, it usually means you're going deep, deep, deep into the magma.
Magma.
I love how you say
magma. I know. but we're not in Iceland. We're not, or most of us. But maybe we have some. Mm-hmm. Icelandic listeners, we want to hear from you. Email us or chime in at the Green Building Advisor. But unless you're in Yellowstone or Iceland or someplace like that, when you hear geothermal, what you're really saying is a ground source heat pump.
Mm-hmm.
It's heat pump technology, but you're coupling it with the heat of the earth to make that heat pump more efficient. Mm-hmm. So should we just get right into it?
Let's talk a little bit about it. And the heat pump, we've talked a little bit about air-to-air heat pumps before.
Yeah, I guess we have.
Water heat pumps.
So let's talk about, what is a heat pump?
Mm-hmm.
It is basically, actually, before we do that, in a heat pump, we're not creating heat. We're moving heat, okay? So you have the heat pump cycle is you've got refrigerant in a loop. On one side, you're pressurizing it, and it gets hot. And then it goes through an expansion valve and expands into a gas, likely expands into a gas, and gets cold again. Much like taking an aerosol can and you spray it and it gets cold mm-hmm. in your hand. That's because it's a gas. It's a liquid. You can hear it shaking, but as it comes out, it turns into a gas, it gets really cold.
Everyday example. Brilliant. I got it.
Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm. So take your refrigerator, a classic heat pump. On one side, inside the box.
It is.
So we all have
a heat pump in our house.
Exactly. The expansion is happening inside, and then it gets compressed outside. So the heat is being pumped out of the box. So you're actually heating your house with your refrigerator, but you're actually making it cool in the refrigerator. So, Phil, thanks for hanging in there.
That was great, Chris. Yeah, right. You got around to it.
Well, I think
your examples were clear.
Okay, okay. Long
A-plus.
But clear. All right. Yeah, good.
Sitting in the front of the class made
up. All right. All right. Yeah, good. There's a lesson to you, students, whatever. You can be just like me, drinking cocktails, icy cocktails. I'm realizing the ice is a problem from an audio standpoint. These things while we're
It is, podcasting. But there's something that the sound of the ice recalls. It's
I know.
Pavlovian. It's a nice thing.
It is nice and summery and great. Okay. So your heat pump, Phil, your normal heat pump, let's say before we bring in the ground.
Right. Like an air heat pump. Yes.
Basically, you've got you're treating your house like either the inside or the outside of the refrigerator, whichever way the heat pump's running. Mm-hmm. You're either shoving heat into the house or you're pumping heat out of the house with this heat pump, but just by, you know, whatever your distribution method is. So the thing about the heat pump is that hot is really hot and that cold is really cold. Mm-hmm. So what if, Phil, you could take that temperature that always goes into the compression mode and always have it at a consistent temperature. It's always 50 degrees, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
We know it's not, but you know, it's always 50 degrees.
Like it is underground, for instance.
Right. So I just took that. Yeah. So I just took that heat pump and I made it more efficient because I took this 150 degree refrigerant and I cooled it down to 50 or whichever way you're running it. I just went into air conditioning mode, and you cool it back down and then run it through again.
Mm-hmm.
You're taking a heat pump and making it more efficient. So a ground source heat pump is using that inertia of temperature in the earth to do that to the heat pump to make it more efficient. So that, in essence, is how a ground source heat pump works. And every diagram you see is so dumbed down as to be almost ridiculous to someone who knows about, but it's really good because it shows the little heat pump. And it shows the little tube going into the ground and then back out again with the temperature having changed depending on what you're doing, either heating or cooling. And one of the great things about heat pump is you can do either. So
that's well said.
Okay, I'm going to take a drink. And then do you want to talk about how we measure? I mean, because it's efficient.
Right. So there's a term called COP that the geeks kick around. And the installers kick around. And
it's coefficient
of performance.
Right.
Forgot. Whoa, slow down. When you hear somebody say COP, don't let them get away with it. But now you'll know. It's a coefficient performance. Essentially, a coefficient of performance of one is one unit of energy in and one unit of energy comes out.
Right.
So like that's electric, for instance.
Right. So like if I had electric resistance heat, you know, like electricity goes in, all that electricity turns to heat, and there it is, one.
Yeah, so not so great. But what if you could boost that? What if you could change that equation? What if you could say, hey, I'm putting one unit of energy in, but I'm getting two out, or I'm getting three out,
or more.
And then
it starts to get exciting.
It gets exciting. Then you start getting some...
Maybe this is a system that could really do something.
Mm-hmm. So when you think of an air-to-air heat pump,
mm-hmm.
a lot of people say that you can get up to three. I haven't seen it. I've seen like twos, high twos.
Two and a half, that sort of thing.
Three.
The literature says three.
The literature says five.
But
the literature says three. Maybe under ideal conditions.
Well, I think there are some newer ones out there that are doing some
good things.
That's what I
hear. But still pretty good. One in, two and a half out.
Right. So ground source heat pump, what are we looking at?
That kicks it up.
Yeah, we're looking at probably
four to five.
The reality is
finding that's to be the case.
Yeah, if you're doing three, mm-hmm. that's probably. In fact, when the energy model guys get going, mm-hmm. they usually plug in three,
mm-hmm.
and then I usually say no. The way my guy does it, I mean, historically it's come out to be more like 4, mm-hmm. you know, the way we're doing. We'll get into exactly how that's done and all that. But
so not so bad. So that's one of the bigger advantages of the ground source heat pump.
Exactly.
That COP is higher.
COP is higher, which means you're going to be a lot more efficient with your electrical use.
And another part of the another factor there is where you are in the country.
Oh yeah, goodness, yes.
So you've got a here we are in Maine.
So we're heating mostly.
We're heating most of the time, and we have a ground temperature here of the high 40s in some places, maybe to the low 50s.
Yeah, well, depending on how deep you go, of course.
Depending on how deep
you go. But let's say our mm-hmm. frost depth up here is 4 feet.
4 feet, yeah.
So, mm-hmm. and 4'6" mm-hmm. if you trust some of those things. But yeah, right. though the reality is probably never. But.
Probably never. So it's a little harder to extract the heat from colder temperatures. We right. do it, but we can do it. But right. if you go down to someplace like Virginia where the ground temperatures are like 62 degrees, well, you need cooling and heat.
Boy, you're,
boom.
Yeah, this you know, is what
can,
a great system.
You can
system.
Go both ways. It's an ideal These, spot for it.
This must be selling like hotcakes down
you
there.
You would think. Or cold cakes, depending on the season.
Ba-doom-cha. Very good. Thank you, Phil.
So
another bit of that alphabet soup you might see on any labels or something is like the EER, which is the energy efficiency rating. And actually, that's something you see on the air conditioners. But because we're dealing with heat pumps, you'll see the same thing. If you were doing an Energy Star house, they'd be looking for an EER rating of, well, 16.2 if you're doing open loop. If you're doing an open loop system, we're going to describe what these are in just a second. They'd be looking for like a 14.1 for a closed loop and a 15 for a direct exchange. I don't know who does those things, but they're around there, I guess.
And so tell us about those three systems, Chris.
Okay, well, first I better say what the EER is.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, sorry, that's all right. And basically that rating, the higher that number is, the better. That's probably the best way to think about it. But what it really is the output of the energy versus the energy that's consumed. So basically you take the BTUs per hour mm-hmm. and you divide it by the watts per hour, and that's your EER, which is your energy efficiency rating. So there, whew, done with that.
So glad you are.
Yeah, I know. It's like, so what is it? 16? Great.
You notice I tried to move on fast.
I know. I wouldn't let you.
No, right. I suffered through it.
There's some geeks
out
there.
I'm the kid in the back of the class, by the way.
All right. I'm in the front like, what is EER? Tell me more. No, I'm not really, but okay. That was only for physics. I liked physics. I was into that.
Did you? Yeah, I did physics too.
Yeah, I would be a physics professor if I weren't an architect, I think.
You have the hair for it.
No, I got to cultivate the mustache. If only I could. Yes, all right. So there's three types, Phil. There's open loop,
yeah.
Closed loop,
mm-hmm.
and direct exchange. And I guess the best way, let's start with open loop, basically. And that is, okay, you've got your heat pump, and on the outside of this heat pump, we're going to have a heat exchanger of some kind that's going to have an earth coupling. It's going to go. It's going to get some heat from the earth. So if we're doing, and usually we're using water. We're usually, you know, an open loop system connotates us using a well. Usually up here, we're using a well.
Right. Whatever's there, you tap into it and you use that stuff.
Right. Right. And if you use a pond or something like that, some of the earlier systems are using ponds and, lakes and things like that. Mm-hmm. And this makes people nervous because basically what
makes me nervous.
Well, yeah. Because basically what you're doing is you're using this water that you're drawing out of the earth mm-hmm. and you're running it through the heat exchanger and then you're putting it back. So if you're cooling the inside of your house, you're pumping out hot water and putting it back wherever you got it.
Into the ecosystem
into
somewhere.
The ecosystem.
No one studied right. this so well, I think.
Right. Unless it's your own well. So if you're air conditioning, what you're doing is warming up the water in your well. Or if you're heating, mm-hmm. you're cooling off the water in your well with an open loop system. Basically, mm-hmm. you're just sipping it from the top and you're dropping it in a little bit lower. So the pump doesn't have to work nearly as hard. Mm-hmm. And that is why an open loop system is almost always cheaper from an installation standpoint. However, you're dealing with, like I said, you know, it's open. The water that you're bringing in, you're using. And a lot of times, if it's a house, which we're assuming, if you're tuning in here, you're interested in residential design primarily. Mm-hmm. Basically, you're using your well that you drink from, and you're running it through your mechanical system, and then you're putting it back into the well, which is actually just fine. It's just a heat exchanger. It's all plumbing, just like you use in your house. That's just fine. However,
it's not as icky as you're picturing in your head right now.
Exactly. Like I run it through a machine, and then it's all greasy, and then it pumps back into the well and all that jazz. But you do run into this issue where you are. Most open loop systems have bleed, which means you are, in order to recharge that, allow that well.
Is that red tint in the water that exactly, you're drinking
yeah,
after?
No. It's your, what was that cocktail we had last time?
The Red Manhattan.
Oh, God, that was really good. Yeah. That was a good one. I was happy to learn of that one. Thank you, Phil. Yeah, we should let you take the helmet
more
often.
We'll switch again.
But basically, so that's the concept of the open loop. We'll get into advantages and disadvantages. Closed loop system, imagine not letting that temperature, that water that you pump in, you're not letting it go. Instead, you're going to send it out into either tubes or deep into a well, and then you're going to bring that same water or glycol mixture back in to your heat pump.
Yeah.
So it's a closed loop system. You're not mixing with anybody or anything else and all that. You are. So what you need is more infrastructure because you have to have a greater heat sink to disseminate this. You're not letting nature come in and out of that system. It's a closed system. So
more expensive.
More expensive.
Less risk.
Less risk. Much more stability.
Mm-hmm.
Easier to really plan for because you kind of, well.
Would you say it's easier to model?
It's easier to model because you will keep going until you get what you want in terms of the well, in terms of the earth coupling. And then once you have what you want, that's what you're modeling. And it's kind of like that with the open loop, but there's kind of a little bit more variables there. The direct exchange is a bit spookier, and I don't understand it as well, but basically...
Good, tell me about it in detail then.
Right.
Exactly. I don't understand it either, Chris.
Okay. Well, basically, it's okay.
Someone
you
out
have,
there is going to understand,
right?
It
and hey, if I get any of this stuff wrong, or you think I'm glossing over something, do chime in on the Green Building Advisor when this post is there, because that is a fun place to have these exact conversations about how I glossed over direct exchange and how awesome they are, and I just don't know it.
Yeah, we're still learning ourselves.
Right. But basically, instead of having a heat exchanger. You have the refrigerant you're using in that heat pump. Instead of having to go through a heat exchanger and back into the heat pump to cool itself out, you're actually sending that refrigerant out into the world, out into the earth to get cooled down or warmed up and then back into the loop. So basically, you're cutting out that 30% of inefficiency you get that you typically get with a 15 to 30% that you get with by nature of having a heat exchanger of some kind, you know, to move heat from one medium to another. So basically, it's like a closed loop system, only it's the exact same refrigerant. So usually it's not PEX tubing, it's usually copper tubing, it is part of the machinery, and that makes some environmentalists nervous and stuff, because you're using not just a propylene glycol or solution or something that you're just trying to keep from freezing. You're using an actual refrigerant, and you're either putting it into a well and back out again in your closed system, or into the earth and back out again into a closed system. And so that makes everybody nervous. And
yeah, I smell a little BP potential.
Oh, something exactly.
Going on, you know, but
it'll never happen. What could possibly go wrong?
Oh, yeah. So what?
You
know, a few hundred feet deep. We'll find a way to get in.
So I don't know if you've gleaned from our attitude here, but I can't imagine saying, yeah, let's do a direct exchange.
But somebody sells them and somebody's got a better idea, so we'd love to hear from you.
Exactly.
Chime in and
fill in the gap where Phil and I are not as hip. So, I don't know, do you want to talk about the advantages of...
So that's it for this part of the episode. Tune in next week for more from the Green Architects Lounge podcast. A quick reminder that our music is Zelda's theme by Perez Prado, and that our views and drinking habits do not necessarily reflect those of the Green Building Advisor. Thanks for tuning in, everyone, and keep up the good work.